It's the Radbird Reboot Podcast. Are you ready to get rebooted, Cardinals fans?
He settles down, at least in the zone, and does not stop running.
Blake Murphy.
This is the identity for the Arizona Cardinals.
The run defense is just horrendous, and it's been horrendous for the Cardinals for a long time.
And Marcos Labrada.
He's going to bring over his philosophy. It should make it better.
Present the hottest NFL podcast from the country's hottest state.
He should be turning around the logo.
Actually, some breaking news we can cover here. This popped up just about, 6 minutes ago.
It's Redbird Reboot.
Arizona Cardinals fans, welcome into the Redbird Reboot Podcast. It's me, joined as always by Marcos Labrada at Pancake Soul. Marcos, we today are looking at, there's about, 20-ish days left before the NFL draft is here. By this Thursday, it'll be just 3 weeks out. I'm very excited to be able to actually get to one of the biggest events of the NFL season. We're still a little ways off. So in the meantime, how have you been handling the buildup and anticipation of the 2024 NFL draft?
Well, the beautiful thing is, like, every main, like, YouTube site that does, like, scouting or does, like, film study, that's all they concentrate on. So you get a lot of content when it comes to, like, breakdowns on, you know, different players and whatnot. So this is when it starts ramping up. The closer we get, the more we start learning, the more we start hyper, like, focusing on the players that we want to focus. You know, we start making our mock drafts and saying, like, look, man, this is a perfect mock draft. Look, I got an A grade on it, A+. So, like, this is, like, I would say, like, for the NFL fan and the NFL fandom, Christmas is the draft. So, like, that's when, you know, we've made references to that. Like, when we draft somebody or we trade for somebody, like when we did for Hopkins, we were like, hey, we got our Christmas present early, so we still got it, but we just got it early. That was the term. So, like, just that, and also looking at all the little subtle rumors between teams, like, what is the NFL insider saying and stuff. So it's really exciting. It gets ramped up more and more and more. So, like, the way I've handled it is just by trying to get as much knowledge as I possibly can and trying to leave the rumor trade at least. The rumor trade for a bit and trying to keep it, like, kind of at bay, because, you know, they can get crazy.
Yeah, some of the rumors that are swirling, and this is where we can at least talk about some of this later in the show. The biggest area that we have seen rumors be able to pop up has been that the Arizona Cardinals are, in most mock drafts, trading down. There's very few mock drafts you'll see out there from most of the big NFL draft, the NFL insiders, that do not have them trading down. And I think it's interesting that what I usually go off of, Marcos, is I usually like to look at the Combine and the Senior Bowl for a lot of rumors. And then obviously we talked about parsing through the smoke last week. Sometimes you'll see things go up and down, back and forth, even all the way up until draft night. I think that something that we want to look at for this year is that there's a huge push to move up and get that fourth quarterback, whether it's at potentially the New England Patriots pick at number 3 overall, the Cardinals at number 4 overall, or, of course, the 5th overall pick with the Los Angeles Chargers. It seems like the Giants are done with Daniel Jones, and people are anticipating them taking a quarterback should there be one there at 6, which, of course, leads to a lot of Cardinals fans' questions this whole offseason, which has been, if you have that first non-quarterback pick in the draft at pick number 4 overall, assuming that the New England Patriots do what we're pretty sure they're going to do and take a quarterback, given that they've got a huge need at the position, your assumption then is that the Cardinals could take the best overall prospect in the draft, which many people believe to be Marvin Harrison Jr. And that has actually been challenged as of late, Marcos. He obviously did not have the same offseason program as other recruits. He also is in a place where the Arizona Cardinals are in need of a wide receiver one, but there is a difference in how people are viewing and grading many of these receivers. And a lot of people ultimately say they're all pretty good. So I think today we're going to go over who is some of the best. Because I've seen Cardinals fans, it feels like, arguing about this pick in these wide receivers for at least about a month, month and a half now, Marcos.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen posts about, like, basically the big three. That's what we can call them. Like, we all know who those people are. It's Adunze, it's Malik Nabers, and it's Marvin Harrison. So they're just having, like, competent, like, comparisons. They're bringing up their strengths and their weaknesses, which is why we're going over that as we speak right now. Oh, not right now, but in the podcast today, we're going over, like, the comparisons and everything like that, because it is the one thing that we almost for sure know that the Cardinals are going to go direction-wise, aside from possibly taking a tackle. That could also be the other possibility. But I think everybody's in unison. Yeah, or edge. Yeah, you're right. Or edge rusher. So I think everybody's almost in unison that, like, the biggest need and in this draft is probably just wide receiver. Get yourself that big weapon.
Yeah, the toughest thing, I think, at least, is rating some of these receivers. They're all pretty much top 10 locks. There's always quarterbacks that you can talk about as going high. And there's always a need for quarterbacks, and there's also a need for receivers. Receivers are something that when you look at how the NFL works, and Cardinals fans can know this, you can have a star receiver for a number of years that can produce, and if you don't have a quarterback for them, then they're just going to be pretty downtrodden. You can also have a quarterback, and we've seen with Aaron Rodgers in the past few years with the Packers. We've also seen other times, at least, with even with the Chiefs' struggles this year for Pat Mahomes, where they still won a Super Bowl, but it really took that superstar in Travis Kelce to be able to actually be that other playmaker. You kind of want to have a quarterback and wide receiver going together. We saw that when the Cardinals traded for DeAndre Hopkins. And so let's get into it with some of these guys, Marcos, because there's a lot to like in all of them. And that's what's really cool, is you can be able to take a look at the tape and you can have your preference for pretty much any of these guys. So obviously, one of these guys has been elevated since before the season ahead of any other, and that would be the likes of Marvin Harrison Jr. He's the guy that most Cardinals fans have been locked into for a while. There's measurements for him are about 6'3", about 210, 208 pounds, and he's gotten comps that have been pretty high-end all over the place. The quickest one, at least, that we've been able to see, most people have looked at his size and body type and gone, oh, he's kind of like AJ Green. There's others compared him to CeeDee Lamb, such as Lance Zierlein. Really, Dane Brugler, I think, hit it out of the park with his comp being skinny Larry Fitzgerald, and talked about how the difference with Marvin and a lot of these other guys is that at his size, the routes are still more nuanced with getting in and out of his break. The hands of making some of these crazy catches are there. And what he talks about also is when tracking the ball, when you talk about how Fitzgerald would be able to look back over his head, being able to track the ball and then slow or speed up to adjust his pace to make a catch. Marvin has that same sort of trait. It's where it's not that the ball is physically slowing down, but it's like he's using his eyes is slowing it down because he's that good of an athlete. What someone also described is he looks a lot like his dad, who is a smaller guy, at least as far as for the quickness, his foot pace when running routes. He looks like a bigger version of that, too. These are some very lofty comparisons. That's two Hall of Famers, maybe even three, and one of the best, maybe a little slower in CeeDee Lamb, but one of the best current wide receivers. What do you think about Marvin Harrison Jr., Marcos? Because to me, he is probably in the rare group, maybe not the top three, as we'll talk about, but maybe at least for sure the top five wide receiver draft prospects that we've seen come out of the NFL draft in the last decade plus.
Well, we all know him as the headliner. So he's the guy that's, like, most likely unifyingly going number one over all the wide receivers. So he's going to be the number one right. He's going to be wide receiver one. He's going to be the guy that's going to be the first one getting picked up and possibly being traded up for. Because that's a great, like, he's joining some pretty impressive company, being, like, one of the, like, wide receivers taken in the top five. So, yeah, just like I couldn't say enough, and I will continue to say that skill that you just brought up about tracking the ball is so underrated, because if you look at a lot of the film last year with Kyler Murray had no trust in some of these receivers to be able to do that same type of thing. So Kyler Murray does, he likes to do this type of thing where he kind of throws the ball and does it with, like, some sort of touch, or just kind of floats it up there. And the reason why he floats it up there is because he's hoping that the wide receiver is able to track it and high point it and come down with it. So you could tell he misses a lot of what DeAndre Hopkins brought to the game, because he was able to do that with Hopkins. You know, he was able to throw it. How many times have we seen him throw it to Hopkins and Hopkins adjusts to the ball and comes down with it? And like to Kyler Murray, he's like that's such a nice thing to have, because when we're in a bind and we need like 10 or 15 yards so we can keep this drive going, like when he doesn't have that guy, you could tell and it gets ugly. And sometimes he just doesn't throw it in the vicinity of the wide receiver because he doesn't want it to get intercepted, because he feels like if he floats that ball to that wide receiver, it's going to get intercepted. And you know what? It's not these wide receivers' faults, because a lot of that type of skill set is something that's either given or you really have to earn it. And not everybody can have it in the NFL. And that's okay, because there's wide receivers that can specialize in other departments. And we're going to speak about another one that specializes in all the other departments. But if you're talking about Marvin like lined up, like he didn't just line up at the outside. He lined up also in the saw position. He was also the wide guy. So he was also the move guy. One of the most impressive things about Marvin Harrison Jr., it doesn't get talked about enough, is one of his favorite route is the in breaking slant. So basically like three steps down the field, you know, he gets his release off. If it's press, he puts hands on the corner all the time. And he does somewhat of like a comparison, like I'll use Alex Rollins' little comparison, like an edge rusher move at the wide receiver position. Cause he said that they're similar. And I agree, because when it comes to hand fighting, you have to be able to use those type of moves, like swim moves. You have to use the forklift technique or like whatever to get the hand off of the corner so that you can knock them off balance and then get past them. He's not afraid to do any of that. So the guy can get open and then run what, 3 or 4 yards inwards towards like as a slant. That's going to be very useful for somebody like Kyler Murray to just be able to like have his little quick two-step drop, see that window open, throw it, and then know that he has a wide receiver that has like a big catch radius that can like most likely go get it. If he throws it low, he'll get down. He'll go down there. He'll die for it. If he throws it high, he'll jump up there. At least I would say, Kyler, please don't do those type of throws. You don't want to kill your wide receivers. Please don't do that. Throw it low to him.
Yeah, no. When you're talking about being able to have that range, you can throw it to him. There's different players who have different skill sets. And I think of that Minnesota Vikings game in his last season when he played with Hop, where Kyler puts it out right in front of Hopkins and Hopkins is able to just reach an arm out and snag it. And you're like, was that a bad throw that he adjusted to? Was it a good throw that he was there? And a lot of it, honestly, it kind of goes together, because when you're looking at a lot of times of a quarterback who sometimes needs to get bailed out by his receivers, Marvin definitely did that a lot this year. Because his quarterback play was not as good. Now, he knew Kyle McCord from when they played together in high school. But like we said, the other quarterbacks are much, much more highly rated, with some even giving first-round grades to it. Whereas Kyle McCord, he transferred to a different school, and Marv still was productive in a way that Fitz was also in college.
One more thing I'm going to say about Marvin Harrison Jr. is there's two types of receivers in the NFL when it comes to like chemistry between quarterback and wide receiver. There's two types. There's a type that's like, you made a bad throw and there's nothing the wide receiver could have done about it. And then there's the one that's like, you made a really bad throw and this wide receiver who comes down with it all the time didn't come down with it. So there's always there's a difference between both of them, where like Marvin Harrison Jr. is the type of person that you really have to throw it between him and the corner to get it intercepted. Because if he can't do anything about it and fight through it, then that's like on you as a quarterback. But if you throw it anywhere else, you could throw it to the side of the cornerback. You could throw it above the cornerback. This is the type of guy that jumps over corners and like reaches out, grabs the ball and comes down with it. Even if the corner has the ability to put a hand on it, that's what he's been missing so much. And Michael Wilson has that as well, but he doesn't have it to the magnitude of Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah, no, the idea at least of how Marvin can take a lot of these items that are just like very, very difficult and make them look routine. There's a lot of times that we forget that teams would deal with Marvin Harrison Jr. differently than the other receivers. He got doubled more than most receivers got double teamed. As far as with corners, with other places, you can see here in one of our clips that we're playing, he had a mismatch against a linebacker and they brought a safety over. And after a while, like, you can say that teams realize, okay, if you're going to be double covering him on the outside, but making sure the safety always lines up on his side, we can move him into the slot, and suddenly you get that mismatch you're looking for. And he has the size and speed of a big slot while also having the athleticism to play outside. So it's really a difficult, when we talk about how the NFL works as far as matchups, like one of the reasons Travis Kelce is so successful is he's essentially a wide receiver who is bigger than any safety can cover and bigger than any corner, while at the same time, he is way too athletic to be covered by a linebacker. I think Marvin is similar in that he's bigger and taller than most cornerbacks, and even if you use a corner and safety, he still has been able to thrive. But he can also do stuff at all three levels. One of the stats that was really interesting from Matt Harmon, who does an awesome job with the reception perception. That's a website I would definitely recommend you go and check and pay for his content, because it's the best wide receiver content out there. He noted that from charting every single one of his snaps last year, Marvin actually was double teamed more than any other wide receiver prospect. And still, he actually had a higher success rate. So think of it like, it's not that he had the same success rate of, like, let's say it's like, you know, every, say, 4 out of 10 or something like that. Normally it'd be 40%. And then he just has more of it. No. He actually had a higher, it'd be twice as high. He actually, I believe it was, with most receivers, got about 9% success rate with double team, whereas he got an 18%, which, you know, not only is it his number, it just shows that he's playing a different game, I think, than the other receivers. And I think it's fine to be able to have preferences. I think you could argue that he's not going to be quite as explosive of a playmaker as far as, or maybe quite as fast on the field as Malik Nabers. Nabers has a lot more slender movements. I know that 40 times Marvin's been timed running, you know, probably about, there have been some times in the low 4.3s. Nabers was about 4.4 at his pro day. He's also about 10 pounds lighter. So you talk about the size versus athleticism. And you look at Aroma Dunze, who's probably a little bit better at, like, being a my ball and contested catch receiver. But it's like, if you're going to look at where Odunze doesn't quite have the breakaway speed, you can very clearly see breakaway speed from Marvin Harrison Jr. when you look at the tape. There are just so many insane football plays that he's able to make that you just have to be able to sometimes just be able to kind of shake your head at some of the different plays that he does. And I'm looking to see if I can find, there's one play where he does have a double coverage, at least from the line. He essentially splits those two to be able to actually just take a runaway touchdown for the most part, where he just outruns everyone. But it's one thing I think Cardinals fans can hear. Oh, you hear Larry Fitzgerald. You're like, okay, well, one, can anyone truly measure up to Fitz? And I think that when you look at his appearance on tape, some of the stuff, especially when CJ Stroud was throwing the ball, you can actually see, like, the leaping ability, the hands, the 1 foot down the sideline. Like, there is enough body control that you can probably say, all right, he may not be as heavy as some of the bigger three guys who come up. We'll talk about who those big three are. He may not have the deep burner type of speed, or being as far as Malik Nabers, you see, he got used a lot.
That's beautiful.
In different places, but Marv just makes the complex looks simple. That's the easiest way to describe him as a prospect. And that really hasn't changed. He had, I believe, with his statistics, which I'll pull up here, still had 1,200 yards receiving despite some subpar quarterback play. He also ended up with, I believe it was 1,600 yards when it was him and CJ Stroud going up, when he had, like, you know, a Heisman winner throwing him the football. At an average of 18.1 yards per reception, had 14 touchdowns. He is a red zone menace because he has not just the height, but also those hops. He's got close to a 40-inch vertical, as was measured not at the combine, but before the season. He didn't test because Marcos, he kind of said, hey, I don't think I have anything to prove, but I'll test if NFL teams want. And teams just looked at the tape and went, nope, you're good. We understand that this is a, when they use the term generational, I think that he ranks amidst of some different tiers of athletes, and we'll talk about those, but he is probably, Marcos, at least in my opinion, I think that he's the best prospect in this draft. The only reason why I think that's a little separate is that When you talk about the impact a quarterback has, Caleb Williams is just a crazy arm talent. They're both going to have similar grades, and if you weight it, the quarterback will come out higher. But he is honestly a phenomenal prospect, and I think we'll talk about how that is for the Cardinals. But let's talk. We can talk also about how he is to the other receivers. Do you have any other thoughts or comments on Marv before we kind of move on to talking about some of these other three who other teams and even some other draft analysts are going to have ranked potentially higher in their eyes?
I just feel like Paris Johnson's is gonna try to pull for him. And I will say, you know, like, hey, if we end up with Marvin Harrison Jr., then that trade down for Paris Johnson that I keep like criticizing, I think that would be worth it. I'll be like, okay, well then, you know what, if we get somebody to be able to bat for like someone like, you know, obviously a Paris Johnson becomes like an all pro, obviously I'll be like, yeah, that is worth it. But I'll be like, yeah, you know what, you know, if you're in there and you're like doing your thing, you're over there pulling for Marvin Harrison Jr., I'll like, okay, good job, Paris.
Yeah, I know. The Ohio State has had some crazy, crazy talent come out the last couple of years. There's also some other crazy talents that we can talk about. Let me go ahead here and we can talk about Malik Nabers, who is kind of one of the bigger receivers. There's an interesting comparison that I've had that I haven't really seen as much before. I know it was on Mock Draftable, but I haven't seen it as much as people notably use it. And that would be as Reggie Wayne. So I think it was 2001 he was drafted coming out of Miami, the U. He ended up being essentially like a, you know, 1,000 yards per year sort of guy, was able to be both a deep threat, was able to play inside and outside. Late in his career, people remember that he kind of made that same Larry Fitzgerald move into being the slot guy when you were able to see that he just was kind of slower a step, at least as far as the explosiveness. He really, I think we underrated a lot of times how good of an NFL wide receiver he was, partially because he came after Marvin Harrison Sr. with the Colts, but him and Peyton Manning were basically, he was a wide receiver one. He was a big play threat. And we see a lot of similarities, I think, with Malik Nabers also to two fellow current NFL wide receivers. And those would be, of course, Ja'Marr Chase, the top five overall pick, and Justin Jefferson, in hindsight, probably should have gone top five. He just didn't quite have maybe the same high-end speed as a Malik Nabers did. And it's not even like with 40 speed. We're talking about the breaking, getting in and out of the routes. But at the end of the day, those are all really, really good comps for him, Marcos. What are some of your thoughts, at least, on Malik Nabers? I think for a while, looking at it, thought that he may be the second best wide receiver in the draft. And a lot of people even have him as number one because they love his game and they love his yards after catch.
I think Malik Nabers is going to be the most productive wide receiver in this class. And I think there's a reason behind that. And the reason why, like, I know that I've been criticized, or like, you know, I've been putting Malik Nabers behind the Dunze and stuff as my wide receiver three. The reasoning because of that is because of the offensive usage of Nabers and how would he fit in our system. So someone like Malik Nabers is going to be a person that's going to be utilized a lot in the move wide receiver role, which is a why. He's going to be the guy that's going to be motioned right before a play. He's either going to be the guy that's going to be used like at the snap motion or motion before the play. He's going to be the determinant of whether or not you're facing zone or man coverage. And you're the reason why those wide receivers get used in that position is because you're trying to get him in a mismatch situation off coverage, because he specializes in off coverage type of, you know, like releases and stuff. Because when you looked at him in LSU, so they tried playing him at the X receiver for a bit, put him on the outside and whatnot. When corners had their hands up on him and that he was in a, and they were in a press formation, he had a hard time getting off of press coverage. He had a hard time fighting through it. Maybe because of his frame, maybe because of a specialization. Some wide receivers just can't do it. They just can't fight press. And that's how you are able to slow them down. Obviously, if you slow them down from having that type of a 40 time to the point where like you're able to get hands on that wide receiver now has to work harder to be able to get that release over somebody to be able to stack on a receiver with that speed. I mean, a corner with that speed. If he's not able to stack, he's not able to win. And that's the issue. And a lot of times, you know, like right there, he's even. So I wish I wish we could have seen what kind of release he had at the line of scrimmage.
Oh, yeah, but I can show you that here with rewinding the tape a little bit. He ended up with having some off coverage, at least for the most part, that you can see, and he made him pay. He turned upfield, made a great hands catch down the sideline there against Alabama. There's a lot of great catches that he also played with this year's Heisman winner in Jaden Daniels. You've kind of been able to see all of these top three receivers have good stuff. Yeah, he is feet. He's got NFL feet along the sideline. What I think you see as far as the biggest difference is he's not going to be that guy who's going to box out a guy and be able to get the play, but he's shifty. He'll be able to get open at the line as far as with using that footwork, and he's very, very good at not just getting over the top, but being able to explode through. So, like, if you see sometimes on even just, like, a slant route, he'll actually be able to take some of those across the middle and run away from guys because he's just got a very quick amount of foot speed, does track the ball pretty well. He had about 1,600 yards this year with Jaden Daniels. And when you watch, I think, like you said, Marcos, he doesn't line up as much as the prototypical X. He doesn't, like, line up, at least in press coverage, and then just kind of get his hands. They move him around, which in a modern NFL era, like, you think of the way that Brandon Ayuk is used. You think of the way that I know people talk about it all the time, but the way that the NFL has changed with that man in motion with Tyreek Hill, it's able to essentially say, hey, we know you're going to try to press this guy. Well, guess what? We're not going to let you press him. He does have a good form of being able to get yards after contact. Not quite at a Deebo Samuel level, but he's one of those players that when you're talking about, hey, we need like 3rd and 7 and you throw it to him with 5 yards, he can pick up yards. He can also be able to move around and make guys miss. There's a lot of people who honestly can say that his production, and this is kind of where I think too, is I would say that the recency bias and a little bit more of this explosive idea because of the yards after catch, it fits with this. I guess the best way to put it is it's a quarterback's best friend. When you can pick up, say, 30 or so yards, like someone said, you look at in the past, one of the guys that is not going to be really compared to a lot, but one of the things I think of is think about how Wes Welker was able to take like a 99-yard touchdown from Tom Brady. He was able to take that and like run down, be able to get open, guy who can move into the slot at least if need be a lot of times to kind of find that mismatch. That's one of those traits that he has. He could be one of those guys that scores like a 98-yard touchdown because you throw a 2-yard past him. He makes a guy miss, cuts across the field. He has that athleticism. And Marcos, I can see why some people could maybe have him as a wide receiver one, but I just don't think he has the same athletic profile or the same skill set as the other two guys on this list. He does remind me a lot of those receivers at the LSU level, though, it's particularly Ja'Marr Chase. I think Chase is more physical, but they're about the same size and height. Chase is also a bit faster. I think in the pantheon of those guys, he maybe falls where he's got a little bit more of the Justin Jefferson as far as the his approach, how he runs routes, being able to get open in some of those regards. But as far as Ja'Marr Chase, is like not quite at that spot, but we've seen how Justin Jefferson, he's not going to test as well as either of those guys, but is maybe more rounded of an athlete. I think also he's a bit more physical. Like you'll see him with the press getting back the ball then Neighbors. So Neighbors, to me, he falls right in between those two, which should probably by their success in the NFL say, you know what? I can see a route for less success from Neighbors, but in the way that modern NFL offenses should deploy him, it's hard to be able to see him, I guess maybe truly busting outside of injury. There are some questions and concerns about him as being one of like the other comparisons that I've found for the most part, which is a Stephon Diggs. Diggs is one of those guys when you're saying, hey, how does this guy line up as like your prototypical wide receiver one? He's just 6 foot, 200 pounds or so. Stephon Diggs wasn't a really high draft pick because of his situation. He probably would have if he had played coming out of a place like LSU, but at 6'1", 191, Neighbors a little bit heavier. Diggs has just kind of been that guy that you can see gets open over the top, is able to be that effective. That's kind of, I think, if you're going to talk about like a Allen to Diggs type of connection, that would be like a Kyler to Neighbors type of connection for me.
Yeah, so like the success where I see with Malik Neighbors hinging with this offense is going to be, how are you going to place him in this wide receiver room and get the most production out of all of them? So my thing about this is you have to move him around the field. As you saw, almost every release he had a free release at the line of scrimmage. And he was able to make his moves like 5 to 6 yards down the line. He's either able to make his little stutter step. He's either like faking, you know, going to the outside, making somebody freeze in the midst of trying to figure out what direction he's going, like before he declares. So in this situation, you know, like if you got to move him over and over and over again, what do we do with Greg Dortch? Now, Greg Dortch is not going to be the same person as him. So now you have to kind of think Michael Wilson's going to be your X then. He's going to be your outside receiver. If you trust him out there, then fine. You know what? Great. You know, you trust Michael Wilson. Maybe he gets to hold up like health-wise, like as the X, you know, for the longevity of his career. Malik is going to have to be that guy that's going to have to be moved in the inside. You relegate Greg Dortch to maybe going back to like being like the bench type of person that comes out, you know, in certain formations and whatnot, because you can have both of these guys out in the same play basically, but you can't do it very often with somebody like Trey McBride out there. And with the usage of more running backs and more tight ends in a Drew Petzing type of like, you know, offense, like you're really starting to like go into like, okay, so we can have neighbors out there full time. We can have Dortch out there partially. And we have to really, really hope that Michael Wilson holds up as the X. Because as far as Michael's concerned, we don't really have another one of those like dominant X receivers onto the outside. And if we lose Michael Wilson, it's going to be hard to replace that X receiver on the outside for like a Kyler Murray, like a formation where Michael Wilson gets lined up opposite side of the trips or the bunch formation. And he has his one-on-one on the outside. And I have trust in him. But if he's not out there, then you're looking at Neighbors being that X receiver out there, Dortch being the slot. And if you trust Neighbors with being able to win that one-on-one coverage, they already know they're going to have to come down on him and put hands on him to slow him down and get physical. So that's where things kind of get murky. That's why I said, fit-wise, I think Neighbors would be a great pick, and he'd be the most productive pick. But for us, it's like, if you get that X receiver, you kind of relegate Michael to somewhat of the Y receiver and then the X. So you have an interchangeable situation between him and Marvin Harrison Jr., because you can move Marvin Harrison Jr. and you can line him up in the slot. You can have those two, but when it comes down to it and you need that third and long, and you can hinge on Marvin Harrison Jr. coming down with it most of the time, I just think it's a better fit for the Cardinals to have that big physical third down perimeter X receiver than you would have another like Y receiver, even though he's explosive as hell. And I would have loved to have Malik Neighbors like 3 or 4 years ago. But like in this situation, like we have a bigger hole to fill as that big like ring down. And then, like I said, it's all going to come down to Kyler. Like, I think Kyler should be asked, like, what do you want? And I think he would. I mean, this is the reason why we're not the general manager. So they make the decision for us.
Right. I also think we can go over his stats for at least this year with Neighbors. He had 14 touchdowns like Marv, almost 1,600 yards, 1,569, an average of 17.6, a little bit lower, but he also was used closer to the line of scrimmage. I mean, a lot of the NFL can be that quick passing game. Even had a rushing, it wasn't a rushing touchdown. I think it was one single carry out of the backfield, crazy enough. He has had two very good seasons. This last year is probably his best. I think the area, while maybe not say disagree, but where I could see is that there are NFL teams that will be able to make their players where they have maybe a prototypical X receiver who's not necessarily their number one, but maybe their number three or four. One example I can think of is the 2013 Seattle Seahawks when they went to, I believe, the Super Bowl that year. You've got Doug Baldwin, you know, about like a 6 foot guy or so. He's essentially like your move guy. They had Percy Harvin, who was really like your slot mismatch guy, kind of like how you would talk about Greg Dortch. And speaking of which, Greg Dortch, only news this week that you can really say as from the Cardinals in general is he did get his jersey number changed to number 4 and also has a 1 year tender officially Congrats. Signed, meaning he'll be back in the desert. But going back to Seattle, you got Jermaine Kearse at 6'1", and Ricardo Lockett. That's your wide receiver 3. And those guys were both kind of in more of that X role. And the Seahawks essentially had Zach Miller and Luke Wilson in those two tight end sets that were the guys who were basically kind of blocking for a run heavy scheme. You were able to then see guys kind of bunch up close, some guys split out, and you weren't necessarily throwing it all that much to the X. Now, the Seahawks have also changed their style of time, because what happened after they see Doug Baldwin go and retire? What happens after Percy Harvin retires? They get Tyler Lockett. And who do they pair with Tyler Lockett? Your prototypical big X receiver in DK Metcalf. Exactly. And I think that that just shows is that I don't know if there's a right or wrong as far as for where it is. Part of it is you have to be able to get that talent first, and then you can adjust to some of that talent. And that's where I would not have an issue with the Cardinals taking him. Now, one of the things obviously that people have mentioned is, we'll find out more about this with some of the other places. Some people have said that he's maybe a harder prospect to work with. Other people are like, hey, like, he may not necessarily be like the Roma Dunze guy who's like going to be like staying, you know, like an hour after practice or trying to get a drill right. One of the things that you can rave about him is how Roma works on improving himself. But he is one of those players that is going to come into an NFL offense and just immediately be a big play threat. And I think I agree with you in that he may not be an all you can do kind of guy as Marv is. He's got a little bit more yak and explosiveness, but he is a guy that's going to go top five in any draft, similar to like a Ja'Marr Chase type of player. Would be wide receiver one, if not for the likes of certain Marvin Harrison Jr. Now, here's one of the things I'll also say. We've talked about some of the negatives, at least, were the height, some of the questions with speed. There are teams who have him as wide receiver one. Do you think that's more scheme specific? Or what I think some of it too is, you watch both of those guys this year, and we'll talk more about the third prospect and something else he went through, and Neighbors just straight up had a better year with the 1,569 yards and a Heisman winner. Do you think it's more recency bias where people are like, oh, wow, look at how Neighbors exploded this year and saw that and are kind of putting him ahead of where Marv was? Or is this something that does have some legs, or maybe he is the best receiver in the draft?
I think it does have to play with like some sort of scheme and whatnot, because there are teams out there that do need that receiver, that off ball type of person, and then if they get them in their system, it kind of puts like their system as a whole. Now, you're right, the X receiver isn't always the number one receiver, and he's not always the most productive receiver on a certain team. He has his role, and we all know what the X receiver's role is supposed to be. That doesn't mean he's the number one, or that doesn't mean he's the most productive, or he's the most targeted. So usually the most targeted receivers out there are the shorter, like a route tree, off-ball, like move wide receivers, because those are the type of receivers you're trying to get a lot of yak from. So that's the reason why I said Malik Neighbors is going to be probably the most productive wide receiver in this draft, because he's going to be targeted a lot, because in a lot of systems, that's what they're going to do with them. They're going to move him around. They're going to try to get him off press. They're going to try to put him in a position where he has free releases at the line of scrimmage, and they're going to try to get the ball in his hands quicker in the down than later in the down. And that's very useful in a situation or a context where you have a weak, like, offensive line that can't block for like 2.5 seconds. Or like, if you have a quick release quarterback or a quarterback that you're trying to like, kind of like, hey, we need to, you know, like kind of develop this quarterback and like give him some time, but we need to give him this weapon to give him confidence to be able to do, like, you know, hey, we're just going to run a quick screen and get you like 7 yards on first down. And then on second down, we could just run the ball, you know, that type of confidence builder, or like, just give it to him. He does the rest of the work for you. So that's the reason why Malik Neighbors, I believe, is going to be more productive. But like I said, it's the question of the system fit, where like a lot of people might not have that same question about Marv when it comes to like, hey, will he fit our system? A lot of people will just probably overlook it, or they'll just move their X receiver down the line. They'll just be like, he's going to be our new X.
Yeah. Neighbors has great hands as far as for making the tracking for the sideline, but I don't think it's quite as good as the snatching that we've seen from Marvin and Rome. But speaking of the latter, let's go ahead and talk about him at least. I think if I had to guess that this would be the guy that the Cardinals could potentially have as one of the best players on their board right after Marvin Harrison Jr., I could see him there is a scenario where he could be wide receiver two for Arizona. Now, Rome has had a tremendous season. He actually had over 1,600 yards playing with Michael Penix Jr., and he is kind of your prototypical X. We haven't seen him line up inside out of the slot as much. They kind of back the ball. He was one of the best receivers in terms of contested catches. He had a high contested catch rate. What's interesting is I think that you can argue and say, hey, he didn't have the same contested, or I should say explosive ability as a Malik Nabers. But also you can say that he kind of had a better job of contested catch for being able to seize the ball and say, hey, this is my ball, than a Marvin Harrison Jr. did. Super physical receiver. He's got enough quickness to be able to kind of get some yards after the catch. He also feasted on single coverage this year. And I really feel like a lot of people also have warmed up to the personality. He works very, very hard. Not to say that Marv like doesn't. I mean, we can talk a little bit about like Marvin, the jugs machine that he was able to get, at least for the most part, just to be able to continue on at that. These are all guys that have pretty good work ethics, have a really huge want for the ball. A lot of people, even I think Walter Mitchell, he likes him as his favorite receiver in the draft. For a bigger name, at least for each of those, move the sticks. Daniel Jeremiah also says that, hey, he might not be the highest rated guy, but he's just one of my guys who can just make those plays. It's hard to see him not having a productive NFL career, in part because he has a very good athletic profile. You can always take a look at least at some of what I call the mock draftable. And that sometimes just shows how good of an athlete or how well-rounded or where someone's kind of where they test through. He tested into being a top 10 receiver this year. You can see an elite level 20-yard shuttle, great three cone. He's explosive with a high vertical jump, and he had a 4.44 40-yard dash. Like, this is also your wide receiver one in most years. He just happens to be in a pretty historic class. Now, the comparison for him is something that I have not really seen people before, but it kind of came from this mock draftable, and it made sense when I actually went back and looked at some of the film. And the comparison that I have for Odunze is Miles Austin, which some of you younger football fans may not remember, but a lot of you older fans remember that guy who kind of seemed like he came out of nowhere and would just be like good for like 100 yards and a touchdown with Tony Romo and the Dallas Cowboys almost every game, it seemed like. There's also a little reminiscent of Eric Decker as another guy. He was with the Broncos with that Super Bowl year with Peyton Manning. Some people have said they like him to Larry Fitzgerald. I think that's more of looking at maybe some of the spectacular catches in hands versus maybe some of the areas. He, to me, is a lot like a DeAndre Hopkins. He makes those snags. He gets those contested catches. He's able to have enough speed to be a deep threat. He's just not a burner, maybe. Like, he doesn't have a 4-3 like the other guys have. I think that if you said, hey, we're going to get a Miles Austin, a guy who gets, like, 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns every season, who can play out of the X role, like, it's pretty much where I think he falls, ultimately. It's really a great compliment, honestly, that he's getting these high comparisons. And I think, like you, if you're gonna look for a guy to plug in, at least as being, hey, he could be an X or like a Y receiver, kind of being that prototype across from Michael Wilson, you get two of those guys at that height, that will really make things a lot easier on Kyler Murray to have those larger targets to throw to.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to have to like say like Kyler Murray will finally have like larger targets to throw to, because of his, like, the majority of his career, like, when we no longer had, like, a productive A.J. Green, and I don't really blame too much on A.J. Green on this situation, but when A.J. Green wasn't being as productive, or, like, when DeAndre Hopkins wasn't on the field, like, the rest of our wide receiver core was just like, wow, we just got a lot of short speedsters and whatnot, and, like, we saw, like, you have three slot receivers. You have them lining up at the X. You have one at the move. You have the other one in the slot. You have the other one, like, and it looks so weird. And it's like, hey, how does this even work? Well, you got to throw shorter to them so they can get the ball sooner in the down than later in the down when you have these taller guys who can, like, you know, pretty much make those plays work because they can come down with it. So in this situation now, where we're thinking like, oh, hey, we're getting taller at the receiver like position and whatnot. Like if you get Neighbors, he's 6 foot. Like he's even like not really considered to be too small or anything like that. Mm-hmm. He's just at average, but he's even tall for what we've had drafted or what we've gone, because we sure. would normally get like the 5'8", 5'9", 5'10" receiver. And I would always think to myself, God, not again, like enough with this stuff, because we need to get size at the receiver position and whatnot. So as far as like Rome Odunze is concerned, so getting taller for Kyler Murray is great. Rome Odunze is kind of like the opposite of Neighbors. So there's two halves to this. There's like the Neighbors type, and then there's the Odunze type, and then you have Marv that sits in the middle further to Odunze's side, because he can do a lot. Mm-hmm. He could do everything Odunze can do. He could do some of what Malik Neighbors can do. Malik Neighbors can't do what Odunze does, and neither can Odunze. So Odunze is going to be your dedicated X. You are going to motion him. You will move him around, but that's not going to be a specialty. His specialty is going to be just straight up one-on-one man coverage type of receiver. You want him as much as possible opposite side of the bunch formation. When I keep saying the bunch formation, now let me just describe this to you guys. So this is what happened with DeAndre Hopkins. And, you know, remember when we used to say, why is he always on the left side of the field? When their offense was static and all they had was a bunch formation to one side, which is trips to the field side, and then the boundary side, you had DeAndre Hopkins on the opposite side. They did that because they wanted to isolate DeAndre Hopkins with that one cornerback. And they most likely, whatever that cornerback's alignment was, that's how they were going to throw. If the cornerback was going to be 10 yards, 8 yards off the line of scrimmage, he was going to get the ball sooner in the down, and he was going to win. If he was in press formation, he was going to stack on that corner, get above him, and Kyler Murray was just going to throw it with touch so that DeAndre Hopkins could adjust to it. So that was like the trick, basically. That's what Odunze is going to do for us as well in these type of situations. He's going to line up opposite of the trips. The reason why the trips is like that, you want to line him up opposite side of that, because most defenses are schemed, like especially in the quarters heavy like era and whatnot, to like play in a situation where either you're locked and leveled with your receivers, meaning whatever is the furthest receiver, this corner has him, this DB has him, or you're passing him on like a fiddle technique or a banjo technique, where it's like first out, this person has him, second out. But these corners have to be off the line of scrimmage to be able to handle these type of bunch formations. If they're all squeezed in together, or if you have two of them compact, that's where a pick happens, and that's where the offense is able to take advantage of bad defensive alignment. So opposite side of that, you don't want your X receiver to be part of that bunch formation, because you want him one-on-one, because you trust that he can win that one-on-one on the outside. So that's what Odunze's role is going to be if we draft him. He's going to be that X receiver, and given his good contest catch rate and his great work ethic, I would be happy if we traded back and we ended up with the Odunze. I would be so happy, because we get that extra pick and we still get a receiver that I believe can help out Kyler Murray with this type of offense. He's that guy that, you know, we talked about with Marvin Harrison, but he can't do as much as Marvin can do, but he can do some things that Marvin can't even do, like come down with the ball as consistently as he did. Like, that's not something that Marvin was able to do. He's like he has magnets in his hands, basically. You know that whole trick, that whole like a commercial about like the magnets and whatnot.
Yeah,
he has magnets in his hands. So basically, you throw it, it just sticks to his hands.
Yeah, and there's been some uncharacteristic drops that he had, at least for the most part. He also makes some crazy catches. As far as it comes to the three of them, I think Rome is probably what I would call maybe the, I wouldn't say safest bet overall, but it's kind of like, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a guy who has the top 10 athleticism, has a top 10 want it. I think that what's interesting is, like you said, as far as production goes, football is measured in a lot of different ways. Like, it's not purely production, because sometimes you could argue that, hey, like, look at Greg Dortch. He's been a more productive receiver than some of the other Cardinals players, but they're all in, like, sometimes it's in the fourth quarter and they're just kind of hitting the guy who's playing in off coverage. Like, there's sometimes that those idea of statistics can be not quite the same. We also saw Dortch make some stellar plays when the team was working and competing as well. It really, I think, comes down to also looking at the legitimacy of where do these guys rank as far as all-time class? This may be a generational class, but as we've seen in the past, there can be a draft like the 2014 NFL draft in which you actually will see Mike Evans and an Odell Beckham Jr. Both have been star players, had amazing starts to both of their career, and yet Sammy Watkins was actually drafted ahead of those guys. So one of the questions I think people want to ask is, what exactly do we want to, and I think maybe saying just that comps are not the end all be all, but how do you really compare these guys to some of the greatest NFL classes of all time? So we're going to do that here in a second. I'm just finishing up the little push here on some of the, there we go. Let me go ahead and, for those of you sharing my screen, let's talk about going back to like the 2000 and say 2004 with Larry Fitzgerald, who obviously was the top player on the Cardinals board. Here is where I would kind of rank guys such as Marvin when you look at some of the best ever. So the number one NFL prospect of all time, in my opinion, was Calvin Johnson for wide receivers. He was just a freak. He is 6'5", 230, huge hands, ran a 4.3. After that, I have Julio Jones. Then I have Larry Fitzgerald, 6'3", 225, still ran the 4.4s, which I see a lot of people saying that Fitz didn't run at the combine. He ran a slow combine. That's not true. People are like, oh, he's a slower receiver. And then he ran a 4.4 at his pro day. And you're like, look, I'm going to say slower receiver can be between like 4.5. Maybe there's a guy at 4.6. I think of Keyshawn Johnson a few years ago where he just was too slow in a lot of ways where he only could be really used out of the slot. And there were other better slot options. And then after that, I have at the fifth spot, Marvin Harrison Jr. I think that he ranks higher than a Jamar Chase, not only just because of some of the size and the profile, but he also can run in the 4.3s, high 4.3s. Chase, obviously, lower 4.3s. You take a look at a guy like this year in Malik Nabers, lower 4.3s, a bit shorter. Even when you look at like some of the other players, I think that one of the things that we also want to look at is when you say generational, like, it's not saying that Marv is going to be like this super freak. Like if he's in the next Megatron, he's about 20 pounds smaller, maybe runs similarly. Like that just shows you how much of a freak Calvin Johnson was. So just for a quick fun comparison, because I love using the Mock Draftable site because you can really easily see athletes compared to other athletes with the percentiles. Here is what Rome Odunze looks like. You can see he is a very well-rounded player overall with a short shuttle, the broad, his height and weight and hand speed, all of, or hand size, I should say. All of this is like really test for a great athlete. Let's take a look now at Calvin Johnson, same chart. Calvin Johnson, that's 98 percentile. That's out of 100, 96 out of 100, 99 broad jump, 98 vertical jump, 90. So like you're talking about, yeah, you're talking about a guy who's like, hey, I'm going to be on Madden and I'm create a player. I'm just going to max everything out as far as I can, except for his hand size. That was Calvin Johnson.
Oh, yeah, that guy was created in the lab. Whew. That's for sure. He was grown in some sort of like an incubator or something like that. And they were like coming to the computer. They were like, okay, guys, we're trying to create the perfect NFL wide receiver. What do we do? All right, so we got to make him heavy. We got to give him a big body. He's going to have to run really fast. He's going to have to be tall. He's also going to have the ability to be able to shrug off of these small cornerbacks that are 5'10 and 6 foot. How do we do that? All right, guys, we'll just go ahead and pump this guy with a bunch of like, you know, enhancements and whatnot. We're going to do what basically the Halo Spartans were done to them. We're going to give him augmentations. Ooh. And this is what came out.
Yeah, exactly. So that's with where Calvin Jones, I should say not Calvin, Johnson, Julio Jones is the next one, at least to kind of look at and see as far as for the profile. You can also see how Julio, he was a little bit shorter, still ran, I believe, in the,
oh my God,
I believe it was the 4.3s, 4.4s. His 20-yard shuttle wasn't as great, but yeah, he still ran, I think, in a 4.3, 4. You're like, this is the guy that the Falcons traded up with. I believe the Browns, the Browns, at least, to get ahead of the Patriots, were also very interested. You're just like, oh man, just another super freak. I think those guys are the top two at their position. So the question, of course, is how does Marv play out? Because both of those guys, I'd say, had Hall of Fame level careers. I think that you take a look at a Larry Fitzgerald is something that they don't have the exact same measuring stick, because Fitz did its stuff at his pro day versus the combine. But he kind of came in a little bit, I would say, at least better than a lot of guys. He didn't have the same sort of measuring eliteness, but when you look at his pro day time of being a 4.4, and he measured in at 225, 230 at 6.2 and like a quarter. My goodness, like that's basically 6'3", and he's got another 10 pounds on Marvin Harrison Jr. We also saw with his routes, his leaping ability. Like, he didn't have the same vertical leaping ability as Mike Evans, but his tracking, his timing, like, he was another guy that we don't talk about as much as a physical freak to be able to have some of that jumping and still have the 4.4 speed at that 6'3", 220-pound size. And the last one we'll talk about is a unique one because I think looking back on it, we didn't realize at the time how good of a prospect he was. But,
do you see what I see? Do you see what I see? Mm-hmm. Look at the blue tag on your...
That's Malik Harrison.
Is that the combination of
I mean, that's a little bit different, but yeah, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison, he was a linebacker out of Ohio State, and I believe he actually is playing right now for,
it'd be funny, huh? They just combine both of those receivers. Like, there we go. We got Malik Harrison.
He's a linebacker. It's for the Ravens. Baltimore Ravens, at least. He was in that 2020 draft. He is a solid linebacker overall, at least. They're just showing overall athlete. Yeah, Malik Harrison, put them together. Demaryius Thomas is another one that, as far as these top-end guys. Josh Gordon, who would have probably been a first-round pick but had a lot of off-field stuff. These are all guys who kind of check all of the boxes, like they win in multiple ways. There's a guy who doesn't win in multiple ways but does win a lot is Mike Evans. So you can see a guy who... when we look at his area, he and T. Higgins are honestly very similar as far as their big height, weight guys who have slower speeds. They're running fives and high four fours, but they're guys who are heavier than Fitzgerald. And then in the case of Mike Evans, he's taller at 6'5". He's basically an Hall of Fame type receiver. Like, he'll be able to run straight for the most part. Not necessarily one of those guys that you're going to say is, oh, he's going to be like a Calvin Johnson type freak, but he belongs up there in that pantheon of top five guys. We'll see with quarterback play if Drake London is probably the closest thing to him in terms of getting there, but this is another guy that probably falls into the top five. He's got a little bit of size and a little bit of weight advantage while having still good speed, but even with being a little bit smaller, Marvin Harrison Jr. is right up there. And that's why I think, Marcos, that when you look at these guys, I think that Marv ends up being probably the fifth guy of all of those people. Maybe you could argue if you wanted to, ahead of Mike Evans, which would mean he's just behind Larry Fitzgerald as a prospect. And again, some players you'll see who are like, think of even Puka Nacua last year was huge. There's other guys, obviously, who don't have those same metrics who are going to succeed. But in terms of with the draft, like, the upside of some of these guys, the bigger, faster, stronger, more athletic you are at your size, the better the NFL is going to be for you. And that, I think, does put Marv in a place where he's probably here in the top five. I think that you could say that Nabers would probably be somewhere between Ja'Marr Chase, maybe Justin Jefferson ahead of him. And then you could also say that you're probably looking at Romo Odunze being right around that same range. To me, I think the question a lot of Cards fans have is, does that mean that you should not take a trade down offer from here, getting the chance to get one of those guys with Kyler Murray? Or do you feel like that there's enough closeness in each of these where, hey, let's say the Cardinals do trade back, get a first round pick, get a couple more this year, trade some of those to move back up and get Romo Odunze at, say, pick 6, 7, maybe 8. Is that going to be worth it? Is Marvin that much better? And I think I could say, honestly, that I could see both sides. I could see those who say, yeah, no, definitely you get the future first and you get Rome. You call that a win. I could also see people who say, yeah, no, like, Marv is a step above. Take the guy who is a sure thing, who's like a top four, top five prospect we've seen in the past few years. He is also similar to an AJ Green, I think, is the one that a lot of people have used. I think that Green was still similar to Mike Evans. I'd probably put him as the sixth rated type of prospect, around a 4.5. At the combine was 6'4", I think, measured in maybe 6'3" in size, but he's slimmer at 210. That probably is my number six guy. You're talking about guys who all three of these guys are in like the top 10 of like the last 15, maybe even if you want to look at Larry Fitzgerald, 20 years or so of the National Football League. And that's where it's a good place to be, the Arizona Cardinals, picking where they are this year in need of a wide receiver.
Well, What I want to do is I want to just take the slam dunk, to be honest with you. I want to get that blue chipper, that guy that I know is going to be good. So for me, I would personally would want to go the route of getting Marvin Harrison Jr. instead of trying to entertain like the calls and whatnot, because it can get murky. Because if you trade back, how far are you trading back is a question. That's number one. And number two, if you do trade back, are you even going to get Odunze? If you end up trading back and you end up with Odunze, I'm not going to be mad. That's what I'm going to say about that. I'll be like, okay, thank God, worked out well. We still ended up with our X receiver. If we trade back from Marvin Harrison Jr. and Odunze comes off the board, and now we're like, oh, great. So we either pick, you know, the first edge off the board, which this edge class, like the top of the line, isn't like as stout as we would expect them to be. So that's why I'm like, yeah, there's not a for sure home run hitter at the edge position, which is why you don't see them getting mocked in the top five. Or like we're going to get the tackle and then we still have to address wide receiver. Let's see if we can get one of these wide receivers that can like come up. We could get the maybes or, oh, this guy looks good. He'll look good in our offense. Hopefully he'll turn out like those type of receivers. Whereas like if you just go for the for sure thing, you just get rid of the anxiety of like, hey, are we going to be able to trade back and make this work out with Odunze? If we just select Marvin Harrison Jr., we don't even have to worry about that. And then, you know, you pair him off with Kyler Murray, you have him as a rookie, you have the X receiver for the future. He possibly will, you know, start getting that chemistry through with Kyler Murray during like the offseason practices and whatnot. You'll start seeing the excitement. That the other thing that factors into this is ticket sales. Can you imagine the ticket sales of not only the Cardinals this year, but also like the jersey sales of like Marv jerseys out there, Marv 18 jerseys, I would believe. Like, yeah, it's just it's a business move as well. So we'll see. Like I said, if they trade back and they get Odunze, I won't be mad. But I preferably would just like come on, guys, just make this simple.
Yeah, and that's, I think, when you look at some different mock draft scenarios, I think a lot of people have thought, hey, can you trade up and jump ahead of the Bears at pick 9? Does Odunze fall to pick 9? I don't think that he does. One of the things I think that we can pull through is just, I did the walk the mock draft as part of the content creators mock draft a little bit ago. And there were some really interesting results because it doesn't always turn out the way you think that it will, but it does usually show a good guide to how fans and people who cover their teams closely feel about different players. So in some of those results to go over, obviously the first two picks were just wrong. That Drake May was picked first because the Bears owner there decided that he didn't like Caleb Williams as much. So I don't know. There's just one of those cases. But either way, you got three quarterbacks went in the top three. When it came to pick 4, I decided, you know what? Let's try this. I could just stay there and pick Marvin Harrison Jr. There were teams that were looking to potentially move up. One wanted to see if the Jaden Daniels, I think it was, or Drake May was there. One of them wanted to see if they could trade up for Marvin Harrison Jr. I think that the Jaguars, if they wanted to ever make like a huge splash to move up and get one of these top three for Trevor, I would be fully in favor of it. I traded back, got picks 11, 23, the 2025 first. Also ended up getting a third round pick next year. And I went to try to trade back up. I thought I had a deal worked out with the Giants, but the next three draft picks that went were Chargers took Marvin Harrison Jr., could not even get back up into the fifth pick, reached out. They were like, as soon as Marv was on the board, nope, it's our player right there. Sixth pick, well, there's no quarterbacks there. They took Rome Odunze. So now all of a sudden, my top two for the Cardinals are both gone. Trying to get back up into pick number 7, maybe pick number 8, sink to the Titans. They've got DeAndre Hopkins. They ended up having another weapon, I believe, that they were able to get with, it was Hopkins at least. They still need a wide receiver at some point, but they especially would need an offensive tackle. They still took the receiver, Malik Nabers, 7th overall. I could not get anywhere higher than pick 8th. That was something at least where you saw the Falcons, Brock Bowers with Joe Alt. Dallas Turner did not make it to pick 11. So the Cardinals selected Laiatu Latu in that mock draft. And I think that, Marcos, that's going to be, I think, similar to what we see on draft day. Cardinals are going to, if they trade back, not be able to get back guaranteed to get one of those top three players. There is one scenario which we'll talk about that was in a recent mock draft, and that would be the one that I think is closest to happening. But what are some of your thoughts, at least there, about do you think that it's worth that extra first round pick versus getting one of the top three receivers? Because in my opinion, I would say probably if you can get both, I think you can call that a win. If you can't get both and you trade back to 11 and can't get back up, then I think a lot of people will call that a loss. So that's a very tricky tightrope to have to walk there, Marcos.
Well, what a lot of people will argue in this situation is they'll say it's a deep wide receiver draft. But this happens every single year that there's a deep wide receiver draft. We speculate on who's going to be good because there's still going to be misses in that entire room of wide receivers. Like, there's going to be like, oh, hey, not all of them are going to pan out. You just don't want to be the one that selects, like for instance, the Eagles selecting Jalen. What is his name? The guy that went to the Eagles, and then the very next pick was Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, he was Jalen Reagor. Jalen Reagor out of TCU. I think it was TCU. It's one of the Texas schools. He goes, and then you can see the Vikings are doing like a live stream of the draft. They just sit there laughing for the most part, and then they go ahead and take him, and you realize that it's part of the issues, I think, with some teams is that they will be able to just sometimes whiff on guys. It's something that happens, unfortunately. But it's how it goes. And your goal as an Arizona Cardinals fan, like you said, is it's easier to miss down when you're in the 20s on those receivers than the guys who are like top five locks. Certified. Those are the guys who are more likely.
Yeah. And it's also like, well, so I keep hearing a lot about like maybe we could trade back and then get added on Mitchell. He's supposed to be somewhere in the 20s. So he's more of somebody that we target with our second pick if we even decide to do that and whatnot. So Adonon Mitchell is about the closest type of X comp that we can come up with as far as like, hey, you didn't get Odunze or Marvin Harrison Jr. The next X or the next certified X is Adonon Mitchell. And I wouldn't be upset about having him. But once again, that's what happens. It's like a crapshoot. Everybody knows that like once you draft your wide receivers and you're doing your comps and then you're like talking about like, okay, this is their strengths, this is their weaknesses. And then you get excited for it. You're going to say it's a good pick or you're going to talk yourself into saying that was a good pick. You know, he feels the need in this position, but we really don't know. And that's true for every single wide receiver in this draft. We really don't know how they're going to pan out, but we can have somewhat of an idea just based on what they can do either on film or what they do and stuff. Mm-hmm. But it starts falling off the board the longer we go without selecting them. You could still select them in the second round. Yes, you could still select all pros and, you know, those type of wide receivers. But at that point, even the teams that are selecting them, a lot of times they're not projecting them to be that great. I mean, let's not forget DK Metcalf went in the second round because people thought, well, he didn't do his three cone. he must not have that ability to be able to cut on the dime and whatnot. He can't be productive. He's just a big freak that can, like, you know, run really fast and out muscle corners. How is that going to work? Well, he comes to the league and then look what he did. And he went in the second round. Do you think the Seahawks were like, yeah, this guy's going to be an all pro or a Pro Bowl stud or an all pro type of receiver? No, they were selecting him because like, yeah, he fell to us in the second round. Of course we're going to get him. And the Cardinals selected Andy Isabella. So of course we got him.
Yeah, no. And that's one of the cases I think of scouting is recognizing the role. I think that there's a lot of things the Cardinals coaching wise at least maybe didn't have guys in the best spot, but at the end of the day, after going to camp talking to an expert, he was like, Andy Isabella, he's catching the ball with his body, he's rounding off his routes, he's not as precise, he's just a small guy, so you can quickly, when you jam him at the line, he's not able to get off. And it just wasn't something that necessarily worked out as far as the NFL level. And I want to also make it clear, we can go over some of the other guys that are in the draft this year and talk about how athleticism also, it's not everything. Athleticism production is still really good, but it's not everything. So one of the things with Adonai Mitchell this year, if you want to take a look at his profile, part of why people are raving, huge explosive broad jump, huge vertical jump. He's super fast, being able to get down there with a 4.3 speed. There are some guys, at least, that compare to him, like one that you can at least say that's a good one would probably be, like, you can say Cordero Patterson, who's been able to be not as great a receiver, but had that type of explosive playmaking. Dante Moncrief is on there. Moncrief was one of those guys, fans I know back at Ole Miss, were going, feed Moncrief. DJ Shark is on there. Shark ended up being a guy who I believe was taken second round. He's not a bust, but he just has not lived up to the idea of being a 1,000-yard receiver. Not to say that he's going to be like these guys, but you can at least see that there are athletic guys who don't quite make it in the NFL. Brian Thomas is a guy that I've seen some people mock to Arizona as 11 or have him as the next best wide receiver. And it's pretty fair why. He's got more of those prototypical X size. He also was more of a vertical playmaker down the field. Super fast as far as that 40-yard dash. You can see kind of there's some other guys in the same draft class that are there. Rashee Rice, the guy out of SMU, very similar overall for the most part as far as just having a lot of those metrics. Rice is just not quite as fast. He went a few rounds later. There's a really interesting spot where I could see Thomas succeeding. You think of Kyler being able to throw down the seam route for a guy who can go up and get it with that speed. I think that what I would like to see is Cardinals get one of the top three guys. Some people also are fans of Xavier Leggett. He's one of the players who I think is decently rounded. He didn't run the 40-yard dash, but people can say that he looks like a 4-4 guy. Maybe you talk about a guy that, you know, you take him in the second round if they're at 35 and there's a lot of receivers going in that first round. And the one that I think that would be good to at least make sure we're going over is probably not a guy that the Cardinals will want is, and this is at least my opinion, I see some people love Keon Coleman. I think that he's a big slot guy because you take a look at a lot of how he performs, where he does well. It is a little bit more of like that Cordarrelle Patterson type of, he can not be a burner. He can keep running down the field. He'll come back and make that huge contested catch. But he's just one of those players that I just think that the value of where you're going to want a number one for the Cardinals, he would probably be the guy I'd think who would be taking snaps away from Michael Wilson or would be taking snaps away from a Trey McBride or a Greg Dortch. You want to make sure when you're building a team, you find complementary players. One thing I think Steve Keim did as a mistake was he found a lot of slot players just get as highest rated receiver as possible. And then he had so many guys jammed into the slot that last year it was like all 5'9 receivers and a rookie. And speaking of athleticism, not always being the case, Cardinals fans, we can even remember. You want to talk about a crazy athletic profile, you can look at Hakeem Butler. Cardinals took him with the first round, first pick of the fourth round that year. Super elite height, weight, wingspan, arm length. Wasn't the best at the 40-yard dash, but he still made it in under 4.5. Good vertical jump. He and Johnny Wilson have a lot of similarities this year, but ultimately, you're talking about a player that the Cardinals fans were like, oh, this guy's got all the stuff to be a prototypical. When you watch the film, he wasn't really an X guy. He was getting bossed around in training camp by like the 5'9 cornerbacks. He realized, oh, he can probably just play in the slot. He's got like, looks like Calvin Johnson, but just doesn't have the same ability as other players. Marcos, I think that with all this talk about these receivers, the biggest thing to me is, can the Cardinals succeed without getting one of these big three? I think there are paths to be able to get a bit better. But at the end of the day, I agree with you that the Cardinals should probably just stay put and get that pick and not make a move back.
Put your wish lists out there. Put your mock drafts out there and whatnot. You know, the banter is going to keep up and whatnot. But at the end of the day, we all like pretty much can almost be in unison who we want as a first round pick. Not everybody, but the majority of people do. And, you know, like, hey, it's Christmas is coming up at the end of this month. So guys, get excited.
Absolutely. Thanks again for tuning in. For Marcos Labrada at Pancake Soul, you can follow him. Follow the show at Redbird Reboot. Make sure you're building up those YouTube subscriptions. You'll get notice when we're going to go live. You can leave comments, maybe some of the comments there off air. So make sure you're following that YouTube channel, Redbird Reboot. And I'm at Blake Murphy 7. Hey, Redbird Reboot has been completed now, which means it's time for us to log off. Until next week, everyone, take care.
See you guys.